You're listening to Civic from the San Francisco Public Press. On this edition, there's a city program that sends specially trained first responders to people in crisis on the street. Today, we'll hear from some members of that team.
When a paramedic on an ambulance gets there, it is a one-way trip to an emergency room. And if their needs, if this person's needs are mainly social or behavioral, the emergency room, although a fabulous place, is not the right place for them. Now we can get there and we can make a decision. This person does not need to go to the emergency room by an ambulance right now. Let's take some time and get them to the system of care that really can help them. That is dramatic improvement right there.
I'm Laura Wenis, and this is Civic. Before we get started, at the Public Press, which is Civic's parent organization, we've been working really hard during this pandemic to pursue angles we're not seeing much coverage of elsewhere, or to take a more systemic look at the issues that are surfacing in the headlines. The San Francisco Public Press is a nonprofit, and we're inspired by the public radio model. That's the idea that people who are able to support the work that we do so everyone can have access to it without paywalls or ads. If you think we're onto something, we'd very much appreciate if you could show your support. You can do that by going to sfpublicpress.org/donate or by helping us get the word out about this show. Subscribe on whichever podcast platform you use or leave us a review. It really does help. So thanks. When someone is experiencing a mental health or a drug-related crisis out in public, sometimes the situation only escalates if armed law enforcement officers respond. Increasingly, city officials have been trying to work out alternatives so that police officers aren't the ones showing up to handle individuals they aren't necessarily trained to interact with or where they don't have the resources on hand to help. It's called the Street Crisis Response Team, and today we'll bring you a conversation with several people working on this initiative, including two people who respond as part of the team. They're all pretty busy people, so you'll hear that some of them had to join or leave during our conversation. We talked about what this team does, how it's different from policing, and why the work is important for them, even if there sometimes aren't enough resources to meet the need.
My name's Angelica Almeida. I'm with the San Francisco Department of Public Health, and I'm a psychologist that oversees the street-based and justice-involved behavioral health system of care. And I am currently the DPH representative that's overseeing and supporting the implementation of the Street Crisis Response Team in San Francisco.
Great. Thanks for being here. Sherry?
Hi, I am Sherry Latchin. I am a licensed clinical social worker. I am a clinical supervisor with HealthRide 360, and we are the behavioral health clinicians that are a part of the Street Crisis Response Team.
Thank you. And Miguel.
Hi, everybody. My name is Miguel Leyva. I am the program manager for the RAMS Peer Division side for the Street Crisis Response Team.
Thanks to all of you for being here to talk about this. I want to just give people an overview if they're not familiar. This team is part of the implementation of Mental Health SF, which is the city's strategy for improving the behavioral health response to people experiencing homelessness. But just to clarify, what are the majority of the people that the team encounters and works with indeed homeless?
Yes, most individuals that we're serving are experiencing homelessness. Our estimate so far is roughly 75% of individuals who've had contact with the team are experiencing homelessness.
Can you talk a little bit about the formation of this team? I think this question goes to Angelica. How was it decided what kinds of expertise are going to be needed? Because as I understand it, that includes a whole variety to carry out this mission of working with people experiencing crisis on the streets.
Yeah, this was a really exciting opportunity. And as you mentioned, it's explicitly called out in the Mental Health SF legislation. And we spent a lot of time talking to other jurisdictions, both nationwide, international, and locally, who have implemented similar programs. We wanted to make sure that we were able to meet both the behavioral health and medical or other health-related needs that people in crisis might be experiencing. And so we decided to have a partnership with the fire department, who is able to provide a community paramedic, who's a paramedic who has some specialized training in supporting individuals who have complex needs in the community. And it was also important to us as a Department of Public Health to include a clinician and also a peer. And I'll just say something that's unique to San Francisco's program is the inclusion of a peer. And we know that integrating people with lived experience into our work has an incredible amount of support and opportunities to enhance the work that we're doing. And we're already seeing that having this three team approach responding to these calls has been incredibly beneficial. And we're lucky to have this amazing team. I'll just add too that we decided that it was important to work with community-based organizations to provide these services. We wanted this work to be really rooted in the community and in partnering with the community, and thought the best way to do that was to work with organizations who are based in the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And maybe Miguel and Sherry, either one or both of you would like to jump in here and talk a little bit more about how having community-based organizations involved and people with lived experience involved changes the way that people experience contact with these teams.
It has been really beneficial and really critical, I think, in this work to have organizations that are rooted in the community. I think one of the biggest kind of benefits or positives to it is that the staff are representative of the community. And so a lot of our staff come from San Francisco, come from the various neighborhoods that they work in, are familiar with the different organizations that are working here, are really knowledgeable around the resources that are available to them. And so that's been has had a really positive impact on the work that we do. It could be something as simple as we engage an individual and that person might be known to one of the team members who maybe has worked with them in another capacity, or has seen them in their community or in their neighborhood, all the way to, you know, if we need to access different resources, we might be able to leverage the relationships that we have with the staff in order to support our clients in accessing whatever services that are needed.
Mm-hmm. Miguel, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, absolutely. I find that this work is really meaningful for me. One who has been homeless for a year and a half in San Francisco many years ago, and now I'm currently working with RAMPS for 10 years and coming into this work with Street Crisis Response Team, I remember being in that space, being in that corner of the street, wide eyes, not knowing where to get help and in crisis. And I would say that I would benefit so much from having a Street Crisis Response Team, folks who at least I identify with, folks who are coming to me and giving me the time and the space and find out what's going on. That is something that we are currently doing now. And the peer specialists on board, along with the community paramedics and our clinicians, work hand in hand in creating that safe space for that someone. What we have in, you know, our basic tool is, you know, besides our team, is that time and space and allowing things to slow down and meet the person where they're at. And I feel like in that space, when we can create that environment outside in the public, that safety, a person might be open to receiving help or even services from us.
Mm-hmm. And I'll just add, I think it allows for the opportunity to have a relationship with the individuals and for individuals to be able to choose who they feel most comfortable and what discipline they feel most comfortable engaging with, which allows us to have more success in making that connection and supporting people to remain in the community or to go to treatment.
And it looks like we're being joined now by Chief Simon Pang. Thanks so much for being here. I just wanted to ask you if you wanted to chime in. We've been talking about what difference it makes to have people responding to people in crisis who have lived experience and who are, you know, coming from all these different areas of expertise. Can you say a little bit about your role in this and what you've observed as a result of having these different areas of expertise on this team?
Yes, thanks for having me. My name is Simon Pang. I am the Section Chief of Community Paramedicine for the Fire Department. So my role has been just helping implement this. I think everybody on this team has a important role. If we're talking about the peer support specialist, that role is to provide street credibility and is the gold standard for trauma-informed care. You know, there are some people that might react well to a fire department member because the fire service is a trusted institution in our country, but some others may not, and they might prefer the professional aptitude of a behavioral clinician, and sometimes they might prefer someone who has been in their shoes. So I think it's an essential piece of the team and very effective.
Miguel, I want to go back to something you were saying earlier about having experienced homelessness yourself. Have you encountered someone on the street and told them that? And how has their reaction to you or their response to you shifted once you bring that up?
I actually had just a couple of instances where I was able to share that. But I feel like what I bring into that engagement at that moment is that empathy and being able to build a relationship based on having a grasp that this person is probably maybe having the worst day of their life. Mm. And as we come and meet with them there, it's really just asking, like, hey, can you tell me what's going on, what's happening? And, you know, we might be wanting to offer them a place to stay, give them something to eat, but they might say no to that when actually all they're asking for is just to talk to someone. So we really take that time to really slow down that process. And it's an interesting question to have that lived experience and being able to bring that into the space. But most of the time, it's just really meeting the person where they're at.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I actually did want to ask about services that the crisis response team offers, because it sounds like early city data on the program show that about 18% of people contacted by the team were transported to the hospital, 18% were transported to a behavioral health setting, like a treatment bed or a shelter, 9% were placed on a 5150, which is an involuntary psychiatric hold. And it seems like there just aren't enough spots in a lot of those places, behavioral treatment facilities, psychiatric facilities, shelter, for all the people who need them. There's so much demand. How does that impact your work and how do you deal with that?
Laura, I'll just say, you know, this is something we're always critically looking at, is what the landscape of available services looks like in San Francisco. And it's not as easy as having a certain number of beds and people to fill those beds, because everyone's unique experience and needs in that moment looks different. And so that's something that we want to make sure that we're responsive to as a city system to support individuals. And I think we've been very fortunate that we have great partners in doing this work, both on the team, but also in our collaborative partners and organizations across San Francisco. And so we work really closely to partner with them to make sure that the needs are met of individuals that we're serving. The other thing I'll just highlight is that what other jurisdictions have seen, and similarly what we're seeing in San Francisco, and which is a positive outcome, is that most individuals are able to be de-escalated and supported in the community. Whenever possible, we want to make sure that people are in the communities where they feel comfortable, and for us to have a whatever it takes and wherever it takes approach to support them in remaining there. And so in addition to this team who's immediately responding to the crises, we also have a team of clinicians and peers who are providing that follow-up support. So our goal is within 24 hours of that crisis, there's another team of individuals who are going out and meeting with individuals and supporting those connections to ongoing care. And we're already seeing that that's been very successful and are continuing to monitor that.
So there's a whole separate team that also follows up?
Yes.
And that already exists.
Yeah. And so it's important that we not only have this alternative to policing opportunity to respond to that immediate crisis, but we know the other important piece is what we do after a crisis and how we mitigate the risk of any future crisis occurring. And so in moving forward with implementing this program, it was important to us that we had that that follow-up built in. And that's also part of the Mental Health San Francisco legislation through the Office of Coordinated Care.
Mm-hmm. Does anyone else want to add to that about the follow-up?
You know, it's well known that we need to have more placements, more housing, more treatment programs on demand. However, I think that doesn't mean that we shouldn't do our best and continue to engage people on the street and in the community. I mean, the alternative is to just pretend we're blind and not respond and not try to help people. And it's not, people aren't going to get counted, and the seriousness of the problem is not going to be known unless we engage people and understand the need that's out there. So yeah. I don't think we should stop our work because there aren't enough proper places for people to go. Yeah. And our teams are very resourceful. We will do whatever it takes to find shelter. Maybe it may not be a long-term treatment program, but we could get someone to a sobering center. We can get someone to an urgent care clinic until an opening comes up in a treatment program. So yeah. we are very successful. If somebody wants change and needs and is willing to, you know, go into treatment, we're going to get that person in.
Yep. Yeah, I want to flip this around and focus on the more than half, 55% of people that the team responded to in recent data that had their crisis resolved on the scene, which I think Angelica was just referring to. I imagine that can mean many different things from case to case, but could you all talk about what kinds of situations resolved on the scene refers to?
Oftentimes, the street crisis response team will be called to someone on a street corner who's shouting, perhaps, and they seem to be reacting to internal stimuli. They might also happen to be experiencing homelessness, and maybe they have substance use disorder. The team will go and spend as much time as necessary to de-escalate them and get it so that they are no longer shouting on the corner. All right, that's the acute crisis. They're agitated, they're shouting, and it might be that the person is now calm. Maybe the person has had some food to eat, some information has been given to them about resource navigation, and the person has capacity to make decisions for themselves, and they're choosing not to go. And it's a voluntary service. So the acute crisis of the person shouting on the corner and causing public consternation has been de-escalated. But the chronic crisis of this person being homeless and needing long-term mental health care, you know, that is a very complex community and policy problem that has to be addressed. We're not going to fix that in the moment, but we will fix the acute behavioral crisis.
Sherry, you look like you want to jump in.
Yeah, and just to add to what Angelica and Chief Ping were mentioning, exactly, we can kind of de-escalate individuals in the moment. And part of it is too, I think, is that for some individuals who have kind of mental illness or mental health conditions, there is a mistrust of the system. And so having those positive engagements in the community where we're able to de-escalate someone and allow them, they are able to remain in the community, helps to build and foster some trust in the system, and some trust that, you know, not every engagement with, you know, with providers, whether it be, you know, the fire department, street crisis, maybe in the past it's been police, it can end positively, and it can end in a way where they feel that they have their continued agency. And so it's a very critical part of the work that we do. And I think it's also important for the community at large, because I think what it does is it allows them to know that individuals are being supported, and that there are teams and there are groups that are here to work with individuals. And I think also just kind of going back on the client side, it might be, you know, with that mistrust, it might not be the first time that we engage an individual. It might be the third or fourth time that we engage an individual. It could be the 10th time that we engage an individual. But to know that, you know, they can't, when they see us, we are there to support them. And if they are interested in that continued support through the Office of Coordinated Care, it can have really profound effects.
Mm-hmm. Also, just to add to that, that moment of de-escalation and the process of, you know, working with trust, and I want to allude to what Angelica mentioned earlier about building relationship. And at that moment and that time, there's a meaningful engagement, and hopefully it's a positive experience for them that when we see them again, we can start building upon that again, and maybe potentially when things open up or they're open to any services or support, that we are there for them.
I'm speaking with Dr. Angelica Almeida with the Department of Public Health, Chief Simon Pang from the Fire Department, Clinician Sherry Lachin, and Peer Counselor Miguel Leyva. Angelica, I want to ask you, because I know that you have to go right away, just in your last couple of minutes here. I understand that right now the team is not available everywhere in the city at every time. It has been expanded once, but, you know, as we've just talked about, there's more demand for services and I think also responses than the teams can necessarily accommodate right now. Do you expect or hope that this kind of crisis response is going to develop a universal response? And how do you expect that that might change the situation on our streets, both for people experiencing crises and for just concerned bystanders and residents?
So I'll say for the street crisis response team, we currently have 4 teams operational, but have a goal of 6 teams operational by the end of July. And this will allow us to provide 24/7 citywide coverage. And I think what's important to note is that these are all calls that historically would have been responded to by police. So every yes. time SCRT is responding, it represents a clear diversion away from a law enforcement encounter. And so we are on track to be able to handle the volume of these calls, and something that we're monitoring very closely. I'll also say that in terms of a larger systemic response, certainly there, Mayor Breed has announced a commitment to police reform, and there's been multiple community processes to discuss alternatives to police response, and not just behavioral health crises calls, but also other calls where there might be other teams and opportunities to engage with the community. And I think all of these conversations are incredibly important to create a holistic and compassionate way to respond to people who have a variety of both health, behavioral health, and social needs in the community. And for us as a San Francisco team and community to be able to wrap our arms around those who we know are most vulnerable and most in need.
And so do you expect further expansion? And I'll just reiterate, how do you think that would change things for both people who need these services and for people who are concerned about them?
You know, it's something that we continue to monitor. If there's a need for expansion and working with our city partners and City Hall to be able to accomplish that. This first year for us has been a great opportunity to be able to implement the program, but we are still in a pilot phase. So we'll continue to track that very closely. And I think it's important both for individuals who are in crisis. We know that this represents a more trauma-informed response to those individuals. And we also want to make sure that we're responsive to members of the community and the challenges that they may be experiencing and wanting to be able to support individuals. And so I think that that's an important opportunity. And we know that many of these calls do go through 911. And so to have an alternative response to that, I think has been great. And we look forward to continuing to be part and at the forefront of those changes, both as a city, but also nationwide, and supporting other jurisdictions to implement similar programs.
All right. Well, Angelica, I'll let you go. I know you have to go to another meeting, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
And with the rest of you, while I still have you, I do want to talk a little bit more about this alternative to policing. Maybe you could say how these responses are different for the people who are experiencing crisis than a police response. I mean, maybe, Miguel, this is a question for you to start off with. Did you ever encounter police? Were the police ever called to a situation you were involved in? And how is that different than what people are experiencing when you respond now to a crisis?
Absolutely. One of the few examples where we are so privileged to have this partnership with our community paramedics is that they have this good relationship also with PD. In the community, definitely, I want to mention that not all neighborhoods are opposed to the PD and the services and support that they provide. Mm-hmm. However, what we want to do is to be able to respond to these calls where we have the tools to engage with them. And the end result is not this, either move away or we need to take you away and that's their end result. For us, our intention is to get to know them, slow down the process, talk to them about what the issues are, what's going on, what's happening, and resolve the situation where PD is not needed, and so that they can focus their work on law enforcement and public safety. I feel like there have been experiences where PD has arrived before us, and we make sure that we give them the space and the time that they need. And as soon as they see us, they say, hey, you guys, you want to take this? And they start to move back or step away. When we see, there are also some situations where our patient or our client in the streets is just escalated and it's not coming down. And as we come in, our community paramedics would say, hey, PD, we got this. And as they move away, we really see how the person starts to realize that they're not in trouble. and that we're here to help them.
Yeah, Sherry or Chief Peng, did you want to add to that?
Well, how things are different because of our response versus the traditional response of law enforcement. I think Miguel mentioned already, we have all the time in the world. And so we'll spend as much time as necessary with somebody. Yeah. I think we bring cultural humility to the engagement. We train our folks. I think the behavioral clinician and the peer support specialist, they perhaps already have that. The definition of trauma-informed care, a holistic approach, and we are not someone that is better than the person that we're standing in front of. In fact, we're not standing in front of them. We want to get down, sit down, kneel on the ground next to them, and let the person know that we're there for them. The other thing that we bring to this is we are medically trained. We're healthcare providers, so we can do immediate medical assessment and triage. Is someone actually having an acute medical problem? Do they need to go to the hospital or not? In the past, the police would get there, and although very well intentioned, I have a good working relationship with the police, they have to rely on EMS. If they get there and they don't know if someone is sick or not, what's wrong with this person, then it ends up being a request for an ambulance. And when a paramedic on an ambulance gets there, it is a one-way trip to an emergency room. And if this person's needs are mainly social or behavioral, the emergency room, although a fabulous place, is not the right place for them. Mm-hmm. Now we can get there and we can make a decision. This person does not need to go to the emergency room by an ambulance right now. Let's take some time and get them to the system of care that really can help them. So that is, that's dramatic improvement right there. And the other thing is, we have access to resources and we know the referral processes. And our colleagues in law enforcement don't have that. Any way you look at it, this is a natural, common sense realignment of roles and a necessary one.
Thank you. And just in the last couple of minutes here, before we have to close, I'm hoping that all of you could speak to what people should do when they see someone in crisis, because we've talked about how this team responds differently. I think it's not entirely clear how people can get a hold of someone from this team or how to get this team to respond, and in what situations the street crisis response team might be the best fit, and what cases it might not be.
At the moment, we are activated through 911. So I would recommend that if someone views somebody that is in behavioral crisis, call 911 and clearly describe what you are seeing. And then stay there. Stay on the scene. You don't have to be, you can get as close to the individual as you feel comfortable with. But one of the biggest problems we have is we respond and we are unable to locate the person. Where the person has already gone before we arrive. Right. And a lot of people will call something in, they're very well-meaning and have a good intention, but then they leave the scene and we get there and we cannot find the person that they called us about. So I'd say, so be very clear in what you describe. And if you describe someone who is in behavioral crisis, who may be agitated, but does not appear to be violent, does not appear to be armed, you're gonna get us. And then stay on scene so that if we have to call you back for further directions because we can't locate the person, you can guide us in. That would help us out a lot. Now, I understand there are some people who are extremely reluctant to call 911. They're very anxious that they're going to get the wrong entity there. They don't want law enforcement there. And for that, we are working on getting a secondary number, a non-emergency number, which can help people activate us other than calling 911. But it's more complicated than you might think in order to work that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're out of time, but Chief Peng, Sherry, Miguel, thank you all so much for talking with me. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
That was Dr. Angelica Almeida with the Department of Public Health, Chief Simon Peng from the Fire Department, Clinician Sherry Lachin, and Peer Counselor Miguel Leyva with the city's Street Crisis Response Team. The program has four teams right now operating in different parts of town at different hours. The Tenderloin team responds from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. The Mission Castro team is active 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. The Bayview team is running 11 a.m. to 11 p.m., and the team serving the waterfront, North Beach, and Chinatown is expected to be fully operational 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., 7 days a week, as of this coming weekend. One more team is launching this month to cover remaining city areas, and the city expects to have 24/7 coverage citywide before the end of the summer. I'm Laura Wenis, and you've been listening to Civic. Civic is produced at KSFP LP 102.5 FM in San Francisco. Our theme music is by John Dillon. Our team includes producer and contributor Mel Baker and assistant producer Liana Wilcox. KSFP is a project of the San Francisco Public Press, a nonprofit investigative newsroom. Find our reporting at sfpublicpress.org.